Hey, this is Rob Bionis. Welcome to another podcast of Musings on Systems Change. Today I'm going to talk about green economics, rethinking green economics beyond the triple bottom line. As many of you probably know, the triple bottom line stands for people, planet, and profit. And it was coined by John Elkington in 1995. And in 1997, it was adopted as a title of the Anglo-Dutch oil company Shell in one of their first sustainability reports. So as a result of that, these three topics, people, planet, profit, sometimes it's economy or profit, ecology, community also, that is also the triple bottom line. And sometimes a fourth element is added, which is spirituality. In any case, the triple bottom line has become very much part of green thinking and green economics, green capitalism. For a company that incorporates the triple bottom line guidelines, it means that all business decisions ideally address this fundamental question. Are the company's business practices financially, socially, and environmentally responsible? And also, another question is, can the company continuously self-regulate its business practices and move beyond the bottom line profit motive and optimize its performance to enhance its contribution to the environment and the community in which it operates? So today, these three P's, so to speak, people, planet, and profit, have become a hallmark of the green business movement and are largely promoted as a panacea to creating a more sustainable world. But the question is, how successful will this be? How successful has it been? So people, that the people part refers to a company's or a corporation's fair and beneficial business practices towards its employees, people, and the community in general in which it conducts its business. In practical terms, a TBL business would not hire child labor and would, of course, pay fair salaries to its workers, maintain a safe labor environment and reasonable working hours, and would not otherwise exploit the community or labor force. The planet part refers to the natural resources utilized by business, and thus its sustainable, green, or environmental practices. A TBL company would then endeavor to minimize its environmental impact or reduce its ecological footprint, so to speak, carefully managing the consumption of energy and non-renewables, and also reducing, of course, manufacturing waste, as well as rendering waste less toxic before disposal or recycling. The profit part refers to the economic value created by a business after deducting the cost of all inputs, including natural resources, pollution costs, capital, etc. So in a real TBL business, profit would not just look upon nature as a free lunch, but the cost of nature, the cost of pollution and so on would be calculated, and then the profit would be calculated on top of that. So this is a very important and a big difference. Normally, profit is limited to the monetary profit made by a company or organization. But as I just said, in the TBL approach, profit also refers to the positive economic and service impact a company has on people and the planet. The TBL formula quite effectively then points out the essence as well as the main defect of capitalism. And this is important, that the totality of the private business enterprise, even the totality of the goal of economic life itself, can be reduced to one word, namely profit. Here's a quote I have from E.F. Schumacher, the author of Small is Beautiful. He said that this means, he wrote, that an activity can be economic, although it plays hell with the environment, and that a competing activity, if at some cost it protects and conserves the environment, will be uneconomic. So this is, in other words, the normal way that capitalism looks at economics and the environment. So according to the capitalist economics, this is a rather irrational economic philosophy of selfish needs creating altruistic results. Money is the highest of all values, and profit is the driver of progress, indeed of civilization itself. So, in other words, being an environmentalist is not really being a good capitalist. And that's something that Schumacher understood. He understood the inherent flaw in this theory and the market on which that theory is based. And he aptly described that as the institutionalization of individualism and non-responsibility. Very apt description of capitalism. So if we build upon this idea of Schumacher and the Green Movement, all the 1980s and so on, we see that it has carefully developed a new economic reform model, which some call sustainability and others call green capitalism. The value system of green reform capitalism strikes at the heart of the simplistic errors of classical as well as those of neoclassical capitalism. And this is a very important point when it comes to green capitalism. It's made tremendous difference and a tremendous change in our thinking, in many of our practices. It points out that the pursuit of profit takes nature for granted and avoids the negative effects business can have on people and environment. So with these defects in mind, TBL was developed to correct the wrongs of business as usual. But the question then is reforming this staggeringly flawed system enough? Is it indeed possible to reform an economic system that has brought us an increasingly divided world of rich and poor nation, that has given us a financial system run amok in speculative ventures, creating mega profits, but very few real jobs, while affecting nature so negatively that many scientists today think that we are on the brink of a worldwide collapse? The Green Movement surely thinks so, and I support that. Green reforms can indeed tame the capitalist beast, they say. I support that, but is it really possible? Since Schumacher's influential book, Small is Beautiful, came out in the 1970s, as we know, the Greens have been busy implementing all kinds of economic, political, and activist ventures in pursuit of a market system that is benign for people and the planet, while also good for the bottom line. But is this enough? That's really the question. One of green capitalism's most ardent proponents, the popular writer Paul Hawken, admits that progress has been small, and I would agree with that. We have seen very little progress overall. So small, in fact, that Hawken likens its impact to mere drops in a bucket. The reason green capitalism has so far made very little impact, I think, is partly political. Lack of comprehensive changes in environmental and economic policies. The Green New Deal. Yes, there's a lot of talk about the Green New Deal, but where are the implementations? That's the problem. There's very little policy change, And until and unless we get policy change, we get systemic change, there will be very little progress. Corporate capitalism still makes up the largest wheels of the predominant economic system. They do not want a Green New Deal. They do not want systems change. And as long as we have an economic system like that, acting as a predominant force, as really as a predator in relation to nature, and politicians are acting as its ombudsman and spokespeople, we can only expect superficial changes to the status quo. We can't wait, in other words, for corporations to voluntarily change their habits. It is simply unrealistic to expect them to voluntarily change their economic practices quickly without mounting public political pressure. So this pressure is important. The talk about systems change is important, but even more important is to put pressure on politicians to create policy changes. We need to implement systemic and lasting green reforms in general. I am not against reforms. And more specifically, we need to restructure the economy so that it can better serve both people and the planet. The problem with these reforms is that they do not restructure the economic system. And that's something we'll talk more about in other podcasts. For that to take place, we need to demand political and economic changes so fundamental that we may have to accept that capitalism, even green capitalism, is unsustainable, unsuitable for restructuring, that we need a new economic system altogether. And then, of course, the question is, what will that system look like? And that is topic for another podcast. We will discuss this later. For now, I want to thank you for listening. And I hope this has given you some food for thought, because these are very, very important topics. Send us your letters, comments, give us feedback. Thank you again for listening. This has been Rob Yannis with Musings on Systems Change. Thank you.